Stafford Marcy is a true giant of the South African tech scene. He's a serial entrepreneur and innovator, best known for being the former country manager of Google here in South Africa. In fact, Google Africa, he got it kicked off here, and for his groundbreaking work in the mobile payment space, the Pebble. You know the Pebbles? This is the man who brought it to you. He's built and exited several leading-edge technology startups in the artificial intelligence space, also served on several boards, MoneyWeb, when I owned it. Stafford, I invited him onto my board. I was delighted and grateful when he joined and served on the board during the time I was there, but I was even more delighted and grateful that he left when I left. CSIR, Advertech, Discovery Bank, and he chaired the Telkom Wits Center of Innovation. He's now best known as the chairman of Altvest, which last week announced that it is replicating its US fashion of listed companies borrowing to buy Bitcoin. They will be the first Bitcoin treasury company in Africa. He'll tell us a little bit about that, I'm sure. Those of you who followed the BizNews portfolio, the Shift portfolio, will know that we have profited hugely from this trend. We bought MicroStrategy when it was very cheap and then sold it. And hence we went from Bitcoin being 2% of the portfolio to 10% as a consequence. So will Altvest be the same? I'm sure Stafford at some point in the conversation will tell us that. But he is always a font of huge knowledge about the future. Listen to him when he talks. He told me a decade ago to buy Bitcoin, and I had the Sean Pesh response to it then. Sorry, Sean, but I still kicked myself for it. Anyway, let's welcome a man who's been at the forefront of the internet in South Africa since its inception, Stafford Marcy.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, a multi-award-winning, truly independent boutique wealth manager. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Okay, just surprise. I thought I was going to be up at 2:30 today, and then I looked at my watch and I saw it was just 1:10, and then I saw the schedule and I saw it was 1:30, so I had to run over here. So look, it's lovely to be here again. Magnus, I see Sean Pesh is here. He's a big giant. To present to some of you folks is quite daunting, but you know what I always look back at? I look at the performance of my asset class in relation to your asset classes, and I wanted to actually have a slide up today because you know that meme where the guy's holding the girl and he's looking at the other girl walking by? I was going to put my face on the other girl, and I was going to put Magnus on the one and Sean Fresh on the other one. And I thought, no. So I do represent an asset class. I mean, I've been presenting at BizNews now since the early days of the Jockensberg. And I think every year I've come, the Bitcoin price has done something quite phenomenal. I think the last time I presented here, the Bitcoin price was what? It was about $70,000, $72,000. I was on stage with Mr. Savage from Easy Equities. We spoke about it and it's popped up to 124. It's back down again and it's climbing up again today. I think every year I come, you can expect at least a 50% ARR performance from the asset. It's just, it is the first time we've ever had hard money in the history of humanity. And I think we're struggling with the concept. I remember speaking to Magnus and Magnus said, I got stumped with the Bitcoin white paper. You know, you remember you read it and you said, this thing's too technical. I mean, that's the problem with Bitcoin. It is misunderstood. And that the problem with Bitcoin is that it requires you to have a science, you know, a computer science brain mapped in with anthropology, mapped in with physics, mapped in with energy, mapped in with all of that. And then finally, you kind of get it. And then even then, you don't really get it, right? But it's quite profound because in the history of humanity, we have never had perfect money. We've never had perfect money. We don't understand it. We don't comprehend it. And the problem that we always do is when we approach it, we approach it in a skeuomorphic way. We look at it the way we look at it through Keynesian economical lenses, or we look at it through the way we value balance sheets that we got taught at MBA school. And then when you come to this pristine asset, that's kind of an Austrian economic thing that's truly personified. It's quite profound because it's very difficult to get your head wrapped around it. But every year, you see how this asset performed. In the last 16 years, best performing asset. In the last 10 years, best performing asset. In the last 5 years, best performing asset. In the last 3 years, best performing asset. It outstrips, it outperforms everything that stands toe-to-toe with it. Why? because we're now seeing capital markets cascading into it. But before we go into kind of what BTC is, and I'm not here to punt BTC too much, I want to talk about kind of where we are today relative to where we were just not too long ago. I'm going to talk about the two, around 2007, 2008. I think it looks a lot like where we are to 2020, 2021 to where we are today. I think three big things happened. A few things happened in 2007. I think a big thing that happened in 2007 was a generational shift. In 2007, if you do some research, you'll find out that we had more millennials in the work environment than we had any of the other generations. So millennials suddenly made up more of the working class than any other generation in 2007. In 2007, something profound also happened. What we had was more people living in cities. So we had urbanization. We had more people in cities, densely packed. So human proximity, we went to cities more so than we were living outside of cities. So there's more humanity inside of cities. We had a generational shift and something happened technologically. Steve Jobs got up and he showed us what? The iPhone. And in 2007, if you take a look at November the 12th, 2007, the Fortune magazine cover, you'll see Nokia on the front cover, someone holding a Nokia, and it says 1 billion customers who can catch the cell phone king. Right? And then something occurred. It wasn't the iPhone. What it was a business that delivered an architecture of human participation. It was a device that wasn't just valuable in of itself. It was a device that had an API, and that API enabled us to write application services on top of it, and it resulted in a multi-trillion dollar business. Think about it. The most valuable companies in the world today, they don't really own anything. They're co-creative companies. Apple, you take all our apps off the App Store. What is Apple? It's a pretty device. That's it. Not with the multiples, not with the PE ratios, definitely not with the market cap. You take all the stuff out of Amazon AWS, and what is Amazon? Merely a company that's a bookstore that's breaking even at best. But what's inside of AWS? It's our stuff inside of AWS. Oh, take all our stuff off the internet. What's Google? Take all our stuff out of Facebook. What's Facebook? Take all our stuff out of Twitter. What's Twitter? Keep going, and you'll establish that what we see happening today is intangible asset value has actually surpassed tangible asset value, and these Mag 7 companies are more us than them. This is quite profound. And this trend's not going to go away. So those were three big trends. But what happened 2008, 2007, 2008 was what? The financial crisis. And that was the birth of the white paper. And that was the birth of Satoshi's Bitcoin invention or discovery. Right? And that's the white paper that we refer to all the time. So in that 2007, 2008 period, substrate changes occurred that pretty much dictated the flow of where we are today, all the way up until 2020. So if I take a look at 2020, 2021, it's pretty similar, right? From a technological change perspective. I think also what happened in 2007 was, like I said, was the Satoshi white paper. But if you forward to 2020, 2022, 2020, COVID time, 20, 21, and 22, if you take a look at those years, three, four things happened there too. Number one, generational shift. What happened? Hyper-digitization. People couldn't leave their homes. They had to put their credit cards into websites, right? All of us were sitting at home and we were communicating through screens, no matter what our age groups were. To get groceries delivered, you couldn't go to the grocery store. You had to put your app into the mobile app or into this, you know, so we had hyper-digitization. Also, in that time, what happened? Gen Zs appeared. They're now on the scene, right? So Gen Zs are here. So from a generational perspective, there's been an incredible generational shift. There's been a hyper-digitization and a new generation emerging. So let's take that as number one. Number two is, if you take a look at from a pure technology perspective, what's here? In 2020, 2021, 2022, what's emerged? I would argue mainstream Bitcoin, right? Suddenly everyone knew what Bitcoin was in those years. Before then, you found very few people understanding or knowing Bitcoin. But in that 2020 to 2021, 2022, it hit mainstream. Second thing that happened was what? ChatGPT. I remember presenting on this and a few years ago in Johannesburg, where we showed ChatGPT for the first time. We suddenly had an AI. Now, if you take a look at it at an 80,000 foot level, and you just look at it for what it is, it's not AI, right? The problem is we keep talking about it like AI, AI, AI. What it is, it's a separation of intelligence from human consciousness. And that's a dilemma, because we don't really truly comprehend this. We comprehend sitting on the horse, riding the horse, horsepower. Then we comprehend, you know, electrification. And then we put it in the car, and then we sit on our bums, and we have access to 500 horses, vroom, vroom, right? And then we forward to today. Now we have 500 minds in the car. So as much as we electrify, we now cognify. And that redefines everything. And I think today we're struggling. How will businesses look? How do we measure? AI is now impacting the Mac 7. Will it increase productivity levels? We hope so. What will it do with the Mac 7? Is it a single trick pony or all the compute? But there's a correlation between AI and Bitcoin. Bitcoin and AI are intrinsically linked. AI needs power. The ceiling that AI has at the moment is electrons. They can't get enough electricity. If you take a look at the United States, its biggest single national security risk at the moment is what? It's they're not generating enough electrons. AI just keeps wanting more. So what's happening that you see on a practical basis day to day? Bitcoin miners, folks that take care of the protocol, have machines dedicated to the protocol that allows it to execute. These things mine Bitcoin in the background, and they are power hungry. But guess what? Utilities are utilizing them in very novel ways. People say Bitcoin is power hungry. It's killing the earth. No, it's not. It's saving grids. It's accelerating renewable energy. Wherever you see grid congestion, you plug a Bitcoin mine on that, and suddenly you're monetizing at point of presence, which gives you the liquidity or the mechanism to deploy your transmission lines or upgrade your transmission lines. Today, we're working with our power utility in South Africa. I can't disclose anything right now, but Rob and I are working on a company right now dealing with our power utility relative to this. Grid stabilization, big issue with grid stability, right? We're putting more and more solar on our houses. We're putting more and more solar on our rooftops. What happens? The duck curve. Lots of electricity in the morning, lots of electricity at night, a complete collapse in the middle. And that keeps happening in South Africa. In South Africa, we have a big issue. We have more power than we can consume in South Africa. The problem is that we don't have transmission lines. Our grid is not capable of transporting this power to where it needs to be. That's why Eskom has, I don't know if you've seen the massive transmission tender to build our transmission lines. We have enormous amounts of renewable energy. I can tell you about points of presence where the local town at that little point of presence is using maybe 60 megawatts, and they're shedding like a gig into the ground, a gigawatt of power, because there's just no lines to get it where it needs to be. So then a bit of a crisis. What solves this? Bitcoin mining. Bitcoin mining stabilizes the grid. So when you have the collapse, the Bitcoin miners grab the power and they keep that frequency. You need it back, they can instantaneously release it back into the grid in terms of its usage. So they can switch themselves on, they can switch themselves back on again. That's grid stabilization. But you know what's really necessary? AI requires clean power. AI doesn't behave well as a data center connected to the grid. AI has a big challenge. It consumes lots and lots of power, and then it doesn't. The undulations in the graph of AI's power consuming, it's erratic on the grid. The grid doesn't like AI data centers. So you know what AI data centers are doing right now? They're partnering with Bitcoin miners. Bitcoin miners are giving them space, and Bitcoin miners are becoming the buffer between them and the grid. So when their demand drops, the Bitcoiners climb in. When the demand steps up, the Bitcoin miners throttle down. So what you have is AI, Bitcoin, and then the utility provider, and it's a beautiful marriage between these things. So AI needs Bitcoin. AI needs Bitcoin to ensure that it gets proper, decent, stable electricity. The utility provider needs Bitcoin to ensure that its AI compute is not erratic energy that is wanted, not wanted, wanted, not wanted. So we stabilize the grid. So there's a deep relationship between the two. The other one is longevity. AI, if you're alive in 2030, the likelihood of you living beyond 100, depending on your age, is this an age group and down, is very, very high. AI advancements in terms of longevity is quite profound. We will probably cure cancer by then, by 2030, right? We'll probably, most of the non-communicable diseases will be gone. So we will live longer. This is going to impact your 60-40 portfolio. The stuff that Sean Pesch tells you and Magnus tells you. The problem with you is you're going to live way beyond 100, right? So I don't think it's going to be 60-40. I think it's going to be 57-43. I want 3% of that. Right? And the reason I want 3% of that is because that's your risk mitigator from an age perspective. So AI needs us from a longevity perspective. It needs us from an electrons perspective. It needs us from a transaction perspective. AI doesn't know how to transact without us. Microtransactions at scale, in real time, globally, without an intermediary. Yeah, stable coins, sure, we can talk about that, but I inevitably believe all stable coins will converge onto Bitcoin. I believe the layer one in the world inevitably will be Bitcoin. I do not believe in all these other L1s that are being spawned by Stripe and all these other companies. I believe they will all in the end consolidate onto Bitcoin. Because it has the most liquidity. It is the most neutral. It is the most sovereign. It is the most decentralized. Those are the attributes that we want in a layer one. We don't want institutional corporate-based L1s. So can you see the correlation between AI and Bitcoin? Also, authentication. Big issue with AI is this thing real, fake, etc.? How do you repudiate it? Look, what's the best repudiation engine on the planet today that we've ever seen is Bitcoin. So what happened in 2007 was a technological change. The iPhone came along, and what we see happening today from a technological change is what? AI and Bitcoin. They're in unison. They're together. Have they morphed together yet? No, not yet, but they will. AI needs it, right? And I think we're back in what happened in 2008 from a financial crisis perspective. In essence, in principle, has happened again. How many dollars were printed in the last 5 years? Right? More than 80% of all the dollars in circulation today was printed in the last 5 years. The M2 money supply, right? The stimulus packages because of COVID. The money printers are going crazy in China, in the United States. The debt levels, $37 trillion of debt. The interest alone is bigger than the defense budget. Stuff's not sustainable. And now we see happening, we see the pictures that we saw over the last week was what? Was Xi, Kim Jong-un, we saw Modi from China, and we saw Putin all getting together. What is that? That's de-dollarization. We're now moving away from the dollar standard, in my opinion, to a neutral asset standard. And the only neutral asset standard in the world is what? It's this. It's Bitcoin. There's no other thing like it. There's no other blockchain. There's no other blue coin, pink coins, you know, all these other coins. There's only one. And everything will converge onto this. Technological change. Generation. Gen Z's here. What do you think Gen Z is going to do in the next 10 to 15 years when it inherits all the boomer wealth? Do you think a Gen Z is going to buy bonds? And do you think Gen Z is going to put their money into property? Do you think Gen Z's are going to put their money into a bank account? Do you think Gen Z's are going to buy a house? No. They're not going to do any of that. Because Gen Z's don't value the tangible, they value the intangible. They want the Nike shoe in the ether. In the metaverse, they don't want the real Nike shoe on their shoe. They don't value that. They don't want a car. My daughter continuously tells me, "Dad, I don't want a car. I want the Uber app with your credit card." Right? That's what she wants. She doesn't want CDs and albums and discs and things. She wants access to Spotify. Streams, assets are now stream-based assets. So this is redefining the financial services industry because the next generation emerging right now that's going to inherit all that wealth, in my opinion, are going to cascade right into Bitcoin. Now, if we take a look at Bitcoin and its attributes today, look at its performance, right? Over the last 16 years, sure, but look at its performance over the last 24 months. Spot ETF, IBIT launched, all the other spot ETFs, best performing ETF in the history of ETFs. In 11 months, $50 billion inflows. Who's buying this stuff? Who's buying the ETFs? Right? Michael, you remember Vanguard? Was it Vanguard that said, don't touch Bitcoin? Not Vanguard? Who was the company? It wasn't Vanguard, hey? No.
There were lots of them.
There was one big one. But anyway.
JP Morgan.
Who's the biggest shareholder in MicroStrategy today? It's that one. I forget their name, but they were the one that came out saying, don't ever touch Bitcoin. Bitcoin has no yield. Bitcoin has no income. It doesn't generate all that, you know, previous economic thought processes that apply to Bitcoin. Guess what? They stayed away. And what happened? Yes, they still don't have a spot ETF, but today they're the largest shareholder in MicroStrategy. You can just Google their name. I always get them wrong. No, it's not BlackRock. No. I want to say Vanguard. I don't know why. It's Vanguard. Yeah. Vanguard doesn't have a spot ETF. Yeah, they were the company that actually did that. So no matter how you come at it, you're going to have it inevitably. Just the other day, we were almost part of the S&P 500 through Michael Saylor. Almost. Round one, no. Round two, maybe. Round three, I think so. You will inevitably have this asset class on your balance sheets. You will inevitably, if you're investing, be exposed to this asset class. It's an inevitability because we will be on the S&P 500. in some way or form. It's the hardest assets, the hardest money. Now, what's emerging? And I hear this a lot. So I don't know. I think Sean Pearson said something about the price. Where's Sean? Sean, put up your hand. I can't see. Is he in the room? Is he not in the room? I thought he was going to sit there. See? Scared. If they knew I was going to call him up. If I take a look, I spoke to Sean outside. I speak to Sean every year. And every year, my portfolio outperforms Sean's portfolio. Every year. And Sean doesn't want to know about it because it's just like he's too busy and it's this thing. But the problem is, if you're a capital allocator and you're responsible for people's capital, I think you have a responsibility to understand this now. You can't ignore it anymore. I think people, because of these big trends, if you take a look at longevity, if you take a look at, you know, all those things, this is material to your understanding of this asset. And yes, the demand for this asset is not going to subside. Pension funds are flowing deeply into Bitcoin. Fixed income markets flowing into Bitcoin. What are they utilizing? Bitcoin treasury companies. Bitcoin treasury companies, the problem with Bitcoin treasury companies today is the fact that you folks don't understand Bitcoin. And that's the problem. It's a big issue, but we are patient because we know folks will inevitably come around to it. The challenge with the Bitcoin treasury company is this core substrate of the asset. It aggregates on its balance sheet, in its treasury. Its sole goal is to aggregate Bitcoin. So the BTC yield, which is incrementing the BTC per share, is its objective. So all it's doing all the time in an accretive dilutionary manner is issuing out equity. And with those inflows, buying Bitcoin, incrementing the treasury, and incrementing the BTC yield.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, the leader in offshore investing, connecting South Africa to opportunities worldwide. Invest better with Brenthurst.